Welcome, everyone. This is the LaRue Show for Saturday, October 22nd, 2011. My name is Marcia Mary Baker, and our topic for today is Enforce Glass-Steagall Now or You're Doomed. Now, to discuss this in all its many aspects, the urgency and so forth, we have two guests. One, I welcome from Seattle, Dave Christie. Welcome, Dave.
Thank you.
Good connection. And Dave, you will know, is a congressional candidate for the LaRouche Democratic slate of six in the country, who the slate and Dave as well are active in domestic and international leadership right now in this emergency situation. Now, we also have on the line, welcome John Hofel.
Hi, Marcia.
Hi. Welcome back, I should say. John Hofel for EIR Online and Executive Intelligence Review Economics and LaRouche Political Action Committee. John has been, in particular, writing on the banking situation. I'd like everyone to, if you haven't looked on your October 14th issue of EIR Online. Now, let me just say, I mentioned the word emergency. It's not because our government has declared it, our government being responsible and recognized that we have a world economic crash and financial disintegration underway and we ought to do something about it. That would be good. No, we do have the crash underway, and many of its manifestations we'll be discussing in the next upcoming minutes. But what we have underway is a kind of reflex response of the powers, financial powers behind decades in monetarism that are activating their capacity to in effect stage a coup, in other words, to get their wishes by dictatorship. And thirdly, however, our situation is characterized by a very extensive awareness of Glass-Steagall, that is the 1933 law, the principle involved, and the fact that we need to reinstate this, not as a banking policy, but in its full implications of having the basis for a credit policy to build our way for the future. Not everyone, Glass-Steagall is everywhere in a way. Not everyone at all looks at it the way I just described in summary form or knows what it means, but it's out there. And the forces associated with Lyndon LaRouche, the Political Action Committee, the slate of six individuals who collaborators have forced this to the forefront of discussion. However, it's not enacted, and historical necessity is that we either get it enacted now, or it's doom. Now, I want to give a couple of updates and then turn it over to open the discussion to our guests. But just to buttress what I just said in brief, because when I say Glass-Steagall awareness is out there, I'll give you another idea. The city of Buffalo, New York, which used to be 500,000 people, it's now cut by half because of the downturn and now crash. But their council, October 18th, voted up a resolution that House of Representatives 1489 to reinstate Glass-Steagall should be enacted. We had, by the way, gentlemen on the line, I don't know if you know we have another congressman co-sponsor. Tim Ryan, the Democrat from Ohio, becomes the 49th co-sponsor of 1489. That brings us to 50 sponsors. But you look around the city of Harrisburg, that is the capital of Pennsylvania and had passed earlier this year a resolution saying Congress should enact, reinstate Glass-Steagall. 10 days ago, they themselves declared municipal bankruptcy. This week, the state tried to say, no, we're going to take you over into receivership. Don't you dare declare bankruptcy. There's a whole flap going on. But this just shows the system is falling apart. There is desire and demand for the right policy, but our question posed to all of us, we are all in it together, is how do we get this, how do we move the situation ahead? Now that's, in other words, the fact that Glass-Steagall isn't enacted is not just a rhetorical statement on my part. This is our job. And the potential is for doing it is great, and it wouldn't be that it's one sponsor a day, you know, that would be fine, or one more resolution in sponsorship. In fact, I have to throw in here one resolution by the Machinists Lodge of the International Association of Machinists passed it. It's a nationwide lodge that was founded in 1889 of machinists that work on the railroads, like in Alabama or Altoona, Pennsylvania. They backed it. So this, when I say the potential is there, you see it on the LaRouche Political Action Committee, Glass-Steagall page and section. But what we're up against is bringing this about, and while the enemy of all of this is fully in gear, and in particular right now, we see the what happens when we continue to have Obama, who's a puppet of the London financial interest, remain in office, because he's just, with his personality and his role, he's just basking in, look at me, and he's basking in the blood of people assassinated in recent days. You can, I won't count them all now, but, you know, you the most recent Gaddafi, you had bin Laden, in other words, foreign policy by assassination, and that's not going to remain offshore. This is the nature of what we're up against. So what I'd like to do is to begin by further discussing this urgent, miserable part of the battlefield in which we are by turning to Dave Christie and see what you want to say about it and how you think people, the general population also, is reacting when they see this, Dave.
Well, I think that the horror show, you know, the minister to the United Nations, I believe, or maybe it was the NATO envoy from Russia.
Oh, yes.
Rogozin saying that this is like these jubilant faces of these democratic leaders acting like they just hung stray cats in the basement. Something along those lines was a statement that, you know, what we're dealing with Obama is what Lenin LaRouche did in putting the Hitler mustache on him has now been fully vindicated. The fact that not only have, you know, we have assassinating these world leaders just with zero, complete disregard for international law, but now assassinating American citizens, with Alaki, of course, and then, of course, now Alaki's son, who they lied and said was 21 years old, turns out that he's 16 years old. And not only that, but, you know, as a U.S. citizen born in Denver, right? So this is just the absolute horror show of what Lynn had said, that Obama is a Hitler phenomena, and has actually said it in another way around Nero, around this just complete disregard of this sort of evil spirit, you know? And that unless we remove him immediately, frankly, any other discussion is in one sense irrelevant. However, it's relevant in the fact that, you know, I'd look at this nationwide drive around Glass-Steagall. You know, we're up to 50 congressmen signed on to the House version. We continue to have word that, you know, there's discussion, ongoing discussion in the Senate about getting a Senate version together. And that, you know, we in the light of this motion, it did come out that from the oligarchy, you know, from the British Empire, that they put out the scare story that Glass-Steagall would wipe out all the banks in the nation. And as LaRouche identified in his statement, the Glass-Steagall Now statement, that was that it's not all the banks in the nation. It's going to be the six giant zombie banks, and people know the names, you know, Bank of America, Wells Fargo, Chase, etc. But that these zombie banks, which really hold over 90% of the derivatives in the United States, are in these banks. So they need to go down. And this is the so-called too big to fail. These are the banking groups that are most intimately tied with the British Empire. and that what they know is that Glass-Steagall will wipe them out, which is exactly our intention. So in other words, I would say with the fight with Glass-Steagall is not so much just simply a nice banking bill that's going to clean up the banks and make them a little more honest. This is the fight to wipe out the British Empire. And the British Empire knows that, which is why they have their little goon Obama running around with these targeted assassinations and the snuff films that go along with them, just these disgusting videos that are available for any child to sit down and watch on, who happens to jump onto Google News and see this horror show, which is, you know, in for sure part of the mentality that would need to go along with fascism. But as Lynn said, this is not a policy that's isolated to foreign leaders, right? This is a policy that is directly oriented towards those on Obama's list in the United States. And that we have to be very clear that that's where we're at. There can be no more time for second guessing on the mustache. This is real. He has to be thrown out immediately. And we can bring these the crowd that runs him, the British, we can bring them down with Glass-Steagall. We can wipe out their fictitious financial paper that they invented with the intent of shackling us with the burden of paying this so that we would crush our own living standards willingly by agreeing to pay for this garbage paper. And what Glass-Steagall says is, no, we're not paying for it. We're with the accompanying credit policy, as LaRouche has outlined it, a return to Hamilton's credit design. We go back to the concept that any idea of money as having some inherent value independent of a physical process is insanity, for one. But we go back to the Hamilton design, and it's, you know, as Lynn laid out in the September 30th, I believe it was, the National Address.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, the National Address that he gave a very beautiful conception that a credit policy is not just simply about money. It is a commitment to the future development of mankind, and that being done through higher orders of bringing higher orders of energy flux density and to the economy, right? That's mm-hmm. that's really how it should be thought of. And so I think, you know, I just put it that way. We have a beautiful perspective in front of us. We have the motion going between Russia and China. We have the implicit invitation in the United to the United States to join in that through the Bering Straits connection through the rail connection, that we do have a potential to unleash a new spirit of optimism and growth and relations between nations, but that cannot happen with the British Empire on the scene. Glass-Steagall will wipe them out, but we have to be very clear about the enemy that we face, which is Obama, and we have to get him out before all Americans find out that they're on his ever-expanding list of those to be assassinated. So
right.
That's where I'd leave it.
Right. Well, and Dave, you raised this statement Mr. LaRouche issued earlier this week. I think it was October 19. I have it here because this is what John Hoeffel is in particular working on. LaRouche said, because Glass-Steagall will not sink all the banks, it will sink about six big fat banks, which ought not to be banks at all, and the sooner they're wiped out, the better. That's good for you, as opposed to this rumor and slander, anti-Glass-Steagall stuff, Dave, you reported on. So, John, what's the picture?
Well, the picture is, I mean, I think if you take what Dave laid out, and you look at the way that the Obama administration has turned killer, that you could also view that as an economic indicator. That, you know, that nobody believes any talk about the recovery anymore. But now you see, you begin to see what we've been talking about all along about the killing side of the system and how this financial system is finished. It's dead. It's not coming back. There's anybody who believes that the bailout is going to bring things back, that these banks are still alive, you know, that they're viable, we can save them, is in a dream world, because in fact, right now, this system is being put to sleep, and it's the illusion that it's still alive is being used to keep things going while the dictatorship is put into place, which is what you see with Obama and the killing. And so the system is gone. It's not coming back. And the choice is either between an American system economic revival led by the three powers, the United States, Russia, and China, or a descent into a global fascist dictatorship under the British Empire in which the global population drops to, you know, under a billion people. And that's what we're looking at. And so in that context, then you look at the things that are playing out in the financial system, that the first phase of this was sort of this infighting, the battles where the banks dumped all their losses on the governments. And that didn't solve anything, but it completely bankrupted the governments. Now you see we have a fight between the banks who packaged all of these mortgage-backed securities and other things, and the speculators who bought them. A big fight over who's going to have to eat the loss, when in fact the thing that they're fighting over has no real value anyway. And now the latest thing is you begin to see fights breaking out among the regulators who are trying to manage this thing. And so the dynamic is really like a pack of wolves that grew to be very large while there was plenty of prey, and suddenly there's not that much prey around anymore. So the pack of wolves is busy downsizing, and a lot of the lower ranking wolves are just going to be cast aside. So think about, say, Bank of America, which is the one that everybody's talking about
right
now.
It's in the headlines, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. As sort of the new Lehman Brothers. And I mean that in the sense that Lehman Brothers was put down in order to create the panic which would allow the government to step in and bail out the banks. We're at a point now where there are dramatic changes that are required if they're going to maintain the illusion that you still have a system. Then you have to have a lot of these banks have to go because there's not enough money to keep them all going. So you're looking for sacrificial lambs, and Bank of America right now looks like a very good target because it's battling with the speculators over its mortgages. It's the subject of numerous lawsuits. It's slashing its jobs. It's got this crazy thing called Project New BAC to revitalize it. You know, its stock has plunged through the floor. It's been downgraded. It's annoyed all of its customers with these debit card fees, and it's facing what looks to me like a generalized run on the bank. And you know, what's the response of the bank? You got the idiot CEO Moynihan saying, "We have a right to make a profit." Well, you know, they don't really, because they don't do anything useful. The bank itself is dominated by derivatives. It's the second largest derivatives bank in the world. And the big flap now is that they want to take, when they acquired Merrill Lynch, they've got a large derivatives exposure. So they have, currently, they have about $53 trillion worth of derivatives inside the commercial bank itself, the Bank of America National Association. And they have another $22 trillion outside the bank in their holding company. This is from Merrill Lynch. And so they cut a deal with the Fed to move the Merrill Lynch derivatives inside the bank. Now, this goes against everything that Glass-Steagall represents, because you're taking this exposure, the speculation, and moving it inside the bank for the purposes of allowing the speculators to raid the deposit base, which is exactly what Glass-Steagall was passed to stop. And the Fed is for this. The Fed goes along with this because the Fed's role as an instrument of the imperial monetary system, the central banking system, is to protect the global financial system, protect the empire, which it has done consistently, which is why it bails out all these foreign banks and other things. So now you have a fight where the FDIC, which is the thing that would have to pay up if the bank collapses, and you know these derivatives, it has to cover the derivatives losses because it has to pay off the depositors, and it's it's objecting this and putting up a fight. So now you have this breakout of an open fight between regulators, between the Fed and the FDIC. So the whole system is just continually collapsing and breaking apart. And meanwhile, the bailout is continuing. You see all this crazy stuff in Europe where they keep coming out. You know, it seems like every week they come out with a new bailout plan that's supposed to be more highly leveraged and bigger than the last, even though none of them have any money to do anything with it. That the whole bailout scheme is nothing but a derivative, a way to roll everything over and pretend that you're solving problems, and meanwhile, you're put it in crushing austerity on some of the populations, especially you can see what's happening in Greece. And, but the austerity itself doesn't solve anything, it just kills. So the nation-state system is being destroyed, the financial system is collapsing, and we have this drive for global fascism. And, you know, that's what Glass-Steagall is designed to stop, and we know exactly how to stop it. We just have to start by getting rid of this fascist Obama.
Right. Well, tying those two things together, let me just pass along. I mentioned the Buffalo City Council. It's not just they took up resolution number 26910 and passed it, right? There was a discussion. And Dave, they said, the report we had is some of the city council members said the following when they said we should pass a resolution calling on Congress to pass Glass-Steagall. We're in a police state, they said. Obama's in cahoots with the Republicans who want the police state. Wall Street's betting with our money, with negative money. And the rest of us are being used as their assets, their blood assets, as John was just describing. Now, Dave, you've been leading the charge, both the national slate, but also in the Northwest, Washington, Oregon, and so forth. But over months, right, you've been on the show before describing these legislative districts that Washington State has, mm-hmm. unions. What kind of truth are you trying to, not what kind, but you know what I mean? How are you engaging that people start to turn and see the kind of truth that you're talking about?
Well, yeah, I think that, you know, there's a line that comes out that somehow the Pacific Northwest is immune from the rest of the nation's crisis. You get this occasionally, but people know it's bunk. People see the collapse that's on. And, you know, a lot of the motion that we've seen around Glass-Steagall in terms of these different groupings passing resolutions comes from our day-in, day-out field work.
Okay.
In terms of the organizers that we have in the Pacific Northwest relative to the population and so on, we have a certain density here that just a constant field, just hammering presence in the population. So we are coming in terms of getting resolutions passed, coming into a population that's been being organized, and as the crisis hits, you know, is increasingly wants to do something about it, right? And I think it's up to 11 legislative district Democratic Party organizations that have endorsed Glass-Steagall.
Is that out of 49 or something? 46?
Something like that, yeah. I think exactly 49.
Okay.
Also, the state Democratic Party has endorsed it, the King County Democrats, the Grays Harbor County Democrats. So there's obvious momentum around it, which, of course, this is also the state where Cantwell is from, who did propose Glass-Steagall in 2009. And definitely from the crowd we're organizing, they want Cantwell to do it again and know that we need this companion bill in the Senate. And, you know, I don't know, maybe you have more to say on this, but, you know, it is also useful to note that as part of the national drive and due to the organizing that we've led, there is, with this Occupy Wall Street grouping, a call for Glass-Steagall as well, supporting the House Resolution 1489. Now, it should be noted that, you know, you can go down there and ask any of the organizers down there or the people that are down there to show up, not many of them actually know anything about it or know that they that's on the list of demands.
Mm-hmm.
And but that's our point. We have to organize this grouping as part of this mass strike phenomena that's developing, which has been an international mass strike phenomena of people who are getting crushed by the economic crisis, but unfortunately they don't have the tools to know what to do about it. And I'll just make this comment just on that note, because it's, you know, a lot of what we deal with down there is this ultra-liberalism in terms of, you know, democracy is the key. We have to let everybody's opinion be heard, and, you know, we have to have, in terms of action, because this is part of the problem we're dealing with, is that as the, if this mass strike has no direction, people don't know what to do, and if they're just left to this ultra-democratic process of just, you know, everybody has their own opinions and let's just vote on which ones we like the best, then nothing's ever going to happen to it. And the irony is that that kind of thinking, this idea that, you know, as if the future of human society, you know, the development of civilization were purely determined according to this market theory of people's wishes and desires and avoidance of fear and you know, pain and so forth, that the irony is that's the very at the very core of the financial system that they are supposedly protesting against. You know, in other words, it's the same philosophies within the market system of, you know, if we just it's, the market is just a conglomerate of people's wishes and so forth. It's the same idea. So being down there and being very clear with a sense of strategy that with the way out of this mess is to get Glass-Steagall through with the accompanying credit policy that is a scientific driver, or is a science driver organization for society, and that that's how we're going to get out of this crisis and look to the future of mankind.
Right. While you're on this, maybe if you want to say anything specifically, I think last Saturday when we had some of your Slate of Six colleagues, Summer Shields from San Francisco, Keisha Rogers, from, she was speaking from Austin, Texas, from the there was a rally there of over 3,000 to 5,000 people. You yourself or your campaign, right, were in Portland and Seattle?
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
Do you want to say anything about that or what's happening?
Well, you know, I think part of this ongoing process of the mass strike, now, it may take different forms, but one of the problems that we have is this sense of urgency in terms of organizing, right? Because
mm-hmm.
I think there was 5,000 down in Portland. We had 3,000 up here. We actually had another crew up in Vancouver, British Columbia,
oh, yeah.
where there was 5,000 up there. So you have people coming out, but they just have no real sense of the urgency of the situation. And, you know, I think that we are beginning to get just how crazy things are getting, especially around how crazy Obama's getting, you know, in terms of these targeted assassinations are cueing people in that this is not normal times, right? We're the level of crisis is moving such that this crowd to maintain their power is also moving very rapidly with, you know, with these targeted assassinations and getting Obama to move forward on the police state, you know. So I think that's my, you know, my sense of what these rallies are about is that they have to see the urgency and they have to see a way out, and that we can't just sit around and talk. We got to get action moving.
Uh-huh. That brings up some of the classes, or if people, it's a logistics question sometimes, right? But what's characterized some of the situations, including on the East Coast, New Jersey and New York, where the Diane Sayre candidacy and others, is when there is an opportunity for a class, people will come. Or, a discussion of why urgency and what strategy, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Let me ask one thing more in that light of things. The constituencies, of course, you've been trying to be everywhere at once, I'm sure, with limited resources, but the engineers, technical people, and so forth for the North American Water and Power Alliance, in other words, for the ongoing, in the domain of getting a credit system going and change, starting the projects to change the planet. You, Kennewick, was your second North American Water and Power Alliance conference. Can you say something about that?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, to be noted that part of the reason that the British are moving so quickly to get their police state and dictatorship through, you know, under Obama, using the what some of the Bush senior crowd had put into place, going all the way back to the Bush senior administration, and then obviously under Cheney and company. The reason that they're moving so hard and fast on this is on the other side of the Pacific, you have, you know, in the middle of the transatlantic meltdown, you have Russia and China setting up major deals. Over 20 different deals were signed with Putin's recent trip to China. Oil and gas development, rail development, fast breeder reactor technology for nuclear power. So they're beginning to move, and what Russia had done was an implicit invitation to the United States to join in this kind of trans-Pacific orientation, and really following off the cue that Lynn LaRouche has led for decades, going back to his role in the Strategic Defense Initiative, which is also being echoed now by Putin with the SDE, the Strategic Defense of the Earth, so even taking it to a new level. So, I mean, you have this invitation by Russia when they extended their rail system up to the Bering Straits, or at least the intent to do that, which is an invitation to the United States to join up through the Bering Straits and begin this Arctic development program, which is going to be absolutely crucial for the development of Asia and, frankly, the development of the planet. And that the only way you can actually develop this Arctic region is by having the development that goes along with it, the new cities that we're going to need, the processing facilities, the railroads, the, you know, everything that goes along with it. And with NAWAPA, you have a capability now of moving into that region and beginning beginning this question of the Arctic development. So yes, we had a conference in Kennewick. It was the second one. We had some of the different engineers and scientific circles that we've been working with out there who were there for the presentations, and just continued the dialogue. People like Hal Cooper were there, who was very familiar with the Bering Straits project in particular. Keith Smith was there, who was a longtime machinist at Hanford. And the Kennewick, which is part of the Tri-Cities, is the right next to the Hanford Nuclear Reservation, which is going to be one of the key facilities, along with the Idaho National Labs, that will play into the nuclear renaissance that will be launched with NAWAPA. And so we just continued that ongoing organizing process of making sure that we have a core of people in the United States that have begun to look at all the issues around NAWAPA, that can be part of a steering committee, if you will, that have at least know the issues to look at and can be advising the group that will come together to actually construct this project.
Right, I see what that's exciting. And in opposition, John, you said something that's very provocative about how the you said an economic something like that. It's almost just a form of economic forecast, the fact of the White House going wild on this Murder, Inc. approach to foreign policy and domestic capability. It just shows how far gone our system is, our economic financial system.
Absolutely.
One thing I wanted to say about this, Dave just outlined this whole perspective, new cities, transportation, changing the terrain and everything. It's been, John, the third quarter just end, reports are coming, the first quarter of fiscal year 2012 is coming out for many states, you know, July, August, and September. And of course, all of their pretense of revenue is just collapsed. $1 billion shortfalls expected for Maryland. California has a big one. Washington State, I think, was announced, Dave. So, in other words, the system is gone. You want to say more about that?
Well, I've been looking at the banks more than the states, but
right. No, well, the banks is
key.
But
and some of the banks are reporting losses, and some of them are reporting profits. But the thing is that all of the reports are lies.
Mm-hmm.
Even the reports of losses are lies, because they're all gone. And, you know, the financial system itself is a disease. It's the disease that's killing us. And so you don't look at this and say, okay, what can we do to save this system? It's the thing we have to be cured from.
Mm-hmm.
And then once we cure it, then we can begin the process of rehabilitating, you know, our economy. But it has to be put down. So you look at things like Bank of America, which is in the news, and there seems to be the potential for using Bank of America as a scapegoat and closing it as a way of beginning this consolidation process, this sort of cannibalization of the banking system. You know, and some people would say if Bank of America is being closed, well, good riddance. And, you know, I can understand that, because the speculative side of this thing has got to go, and it's way too big. But what we have to do is to take these big banks, especially the big ones, the ones that are too big to fail, and we have to break them up. You have to start off with eliminating all derivatives contracts in every way, shape, or form. No derivatives contract exists anymore. You can't collect on them. You know, they're just gone. They're outlawed, and anything that exists is declared null and void. And then you take these banks and you pull out the banking, the commercial banking part, the part that serves the real customers, you know, that people's deposits, loans to businesses and things like that. But you got to break these big banks up into smaller components, because you can't have, you know, four banks controlling half the deposits in the country. That's just not acceptable. So you've got to put these things down, but it's got to be done from the standpoint of Glass-Steagall and a reorganization of the entire system into an American system-style credit system. Because if you don't do that, you're not really accomplishing anything.
Right. One thing, let me just put in a pitch here. I think the animation that's available on LaRouchePack.com is something of great interest. In other words, separating the flows out of the worthy and the completely unworthy crap in the banking system and among banks. Well, let me ask one other thing about in terms of the mass strike manifestation through Occupy Seattle, Vancouver, Montreal, you know, since it's been in the last 10 days and continues. One thing is, Dave, the reports that come in from different places identify aspects of the kind of attempted intervention in mind control, you know, to get people to fixate on single issues against the tar sands Alberta Midwest pipeline, or, you know what I mean, guess,
mm-hmm.
or something else. David Suzuki, that environmentalist in Canada, tried to have a big influence in Montreal. You know, we're up against it that way.
Mm-hmm.
And that raises something. Last week, Leandra Bernstein was on the show about the coup danger of the country, the apparatus, and said that we have the danger of dictatorship from actual physical police operations, surveillance, detention centers, the hardcore, and then you have the dictatorship over people's minds. But do you want to say more about that, including helping people to break the bonds?
Well, yeah, I think, you know, this the what Suzuki was saying was, you know, even a step up from what Prince Philip, who is evil as hell, he's Prince Philip saying we need the population under 2 billion, and I heard recently he was even saying down to 1 billion.
Mm-hmm.
Suzuki's taking it a step further, saying 200 million.
Oh, wow.
I think that's below the baboons, or, you know, it's definitely the
lower life forms.
On the level of the apes, you know.
Yeah.
So this is not only is it insane, but it's, in terms of the people running it from on high, they know what they're doing. And it's, you know, the whole question of fascism, you know, what Hitler represented, what the Nazis, they were Greens, you know, it was the same ideology. And I think, you know, that's really part of the imperial policy is, you know, getting people to accept this. And that part of the mind control is exactly what the basement deals with is, you know, people's acceptance of this as a the scientific side of it, you know, the acceptance of the second law of thermodynamics, the idea that the universe has fixed resources, that human creativity can play no part in the development of new technologies that would allow us to utilize resources that we previously were incapable of using. In other words, that it's a denial of the way the universe actually works. And this is what the basement team has actually shown or repeatedly, which is even the biosphere itself, taking something as just simple as the development from amphibians to reptiles to mammals, each one of those major shifts in terms of the dominant species on the planet is of a higher order of energy flux density, of increasing capability to move further, you know, based on an ability to consume more and so on and so forth, right? So, and that mankind must do the same thing if we're going to survive. We have to be making the kind of scientific breakthroughs that enables the, you know, the application of the technology, which increases our energy flux density as well, as we see with the, from, you know, wood to coal to oil to nuclear, you know, fission to fusion, and from there matter, antimatter, and things we don't even know about, right? So, so that's the kind of progression that we have to make, and to break the kind of brainwashing, which is, you know, the scientific side is this second law, and then the religious side is the environmentalism, and these guys are really like high priests of some strange religious cult. That they get people to go along with this, but really they're just playing out the part of enacting the imperial policy, which is that the British Empire refuses to allow the technology to be accessed by the peasant class and to keep them stupid and just out working in the fields, you know, or I don't even know if they'll get that far because their policy will destroy them too. So I think the way we're going to break the brainwashing is a sense of the way the universe actually operates, that it's anti-entropic in its development, that it has these higher-ordered processes that we effectively not evolve into, but that we make the creative revolutions into.
One thing you had, you mentioned people day week after week have been organizing in your part of the country, and you brought music to the streets, right, in the Occupy Wall Street, Occupy Seattle, or wherever you had it. Would you say about that? I mean, that puts people in a different domain, right? It's that moment of irony. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, you know, I the whole issue that, you know, especially what Sky Shields did with his leaflet that he put out, challenging this younger generation who accepted the crap of what the baby boomers did in their so-called revolution, where, you know, they just took off their clothes and started having sex with whatever, and, you know, the drugs and the music, right? This is all part of the idea of bestializing the human soul to get them into these, you know, just to be like animals. And you know, it was the same conception. You know, much of the music that was being played at the Occupy Seattle, for example, was just, a lot of it was this old, you know, the 60s music and stuff. And then, of course, our generation's great advances with techno, which is just, you know, just turn your brain into mush or computer wires or something, I don't know. But, you know, and so then we set up and had a handful of the patriotic songs, you know, My Country, 'Tis of Thee, Star Spangled Banner, and then a few of the spirituals as well. Also, Ode to a Greedy Man, which is a good one. the canon there.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very stunning when people actually hear real beauty. And we just had a constant crowd around the table of people who just, it was a, somewhat of a shocking experience to just hear this beauty immediately within a kind of an, you know, it's a an ugly scene in one sense, you know, in the sense of just their kind of the degraded state of our population, you know.
Yeah.
But very powerful, I think, uplifting. And
yes, and I it was thrilling. Keisha described the same thing in Texas, and we the one thing, let me, one other thing about the Northwest, I understand too, you personally, sometimes when you do meetings, there was one recently called Inspire, that's some kind of grouping. That's the name of it? Or maybe I had it wrong, Dave. I didn't know. Or maybe someone in your campaign had an individual meeting with members of this group. I just
You know, actually, that I was just invited.
I see.
I haven't gone to there yet.
Yeah, so. Right. It's just that I was wondering about the response in that. But,
right.
We have one email that's come in from a gentleman named Mark, but he still is saying, what about Congress? What point is there in talking to congressmen who are in power and know what is happening and will do nothing about it? So, I mean, we have some closing minutes, but do you want to restate something about this in response, Dave?
Well, I think that, you know, what Lynn had said in some recent remarks, just that we are dealing with utter cowardice in the Congress. And, you know, it should be emphasized that after Obama's illegal war in Libya, we have the motion for the impeachment, which he should have been impeached for. I mean, he should just be thrown out in general, but there should have been formal impeachment brought, and there was moves towards that. This was blocked, and blocked by people that should know better. LaRouche has mentioned Senator Kerry, especially in this regard. And what you're dealing with is just cowardice in most cases, and because of that cowardice, results in turning to the dark side and going along with policies that are completely anti-human, but are so evil that this fear just drives them at sort of the Bettelheim syndrome, maybe, you know, where because of the brutality of your captor, the people that control you, you turn to that same brutality yourself. So, you know, I think what we have to do is, as this mass strike process evolves, that as we educate it and get it the right ideas and the sense of urgency, that to take that to the Congress and beat them with it effectively, and that we will find the better ones that do have the courage to fight. But I think this is especially where Lyndon LaRouche comes in, that he's never given up. He has always fought, and that we could all do to take some clues from him, or some you know, get a sense of what he's done through his life, which is to always fight for truth, to never get you know, opportunistic, which is, you know, a lot of what we have to deal with in the organizing, is always being right up top with where we're at in world history, that the entire global financial system's coming down. Europe is in the middle of discussions of you know, their blowout, and that we have a situation where the British Empire is going to maintain its power through this coup that we're in the middle of, that it's not going to happen, it's in the middle of it, and what these drone attacks represent. So if anything good's going to come out of the Congress, it's because we're going to liberate them from Obama, and that they don't have time to waste, and they have to move with us to get the job done, move with LaRouche. He knows what to do.
I'm sure Mark appreciated that. He's from Virginia, by the way.
Yeah.
And this state has its quotient of knuckleheads and cowards.
Mm-hmm.
But what you said is universally true. And John, do you want to underscore again, too, you met with, you were at a staff meeting with Mr. LaRouche today, and certainly, John, you often speak and write about it's the end game for the empire, and that means danger, but it means potential. But do you want to also respond on this?
Yeah, I mean, I'd say start off by saying that the oligarchic system has a culture of death, that it lives by subjugating people, by cannibalizing the planet, and it has never produced, it doesn't believe in growth. It blocks progress. You know, if we hadn't had the British Empire, which is actually a continuation of the Roman Empire through Rome, Byzantium, Venice, and now London, that we would probably be well out, you know, colonizing other planets by now. And that, you know, so we've got to break from this system. We've got to give it up. And anybody who supports this system, whether they know it or not, is supporting genocide. And you have all these congressmen who are terrorized because there's a police state apparatus. Some of them are evil. Some of them are gutless. But there's a police state apparatus there which is terrorizing them. And, you know, so what if we can get the people to understand what's at stake and what needs to be done, then the people themselves will cause things to change in Washington in kind of a nonlinear way. You know, it's not a question of looking at votes and things like that. It's if the population changes enough, then Washington will change too. You know, we'll establish it basically, you know, that's the way to go about it. That's the way to think about it. If the people change, then the government will have to change. And we have to do it quickly because otherwise we're simply not going to make it.
Right. And looking ahead on this, because, Dave, you touched on something about we're talking about people's changing their own sense of themselves, their identity to be human, not just to assemble what they can while they're here on Earth, and that's the end. But how your creativity looks and enjoys looking ahead and building a future, as opposed to letting it. You called it the marketplace, I think. You know, it never happened that way. There was no marketplace that made deliberate decisions on what to build. Would you say more about this, too, in terms of the, and in particular, you're involved in an event October 29th. It's very important for the United States and the Pacific Alliance towards building the future. That'll be in San Francisco on October 29th.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I mean, it comes in its sort of left and right versions, you know, on the one side, you have, say, the Fabian variety. On the other side, maybe the Austrian variety, which is what we deal with people, you know, the Ron Paul and so on and so forth. But it's the same mentality. It's that there's a limited, even in terms of their monetarist policies, it's simply money just becomes a metric for, you know, the law of the jungle, if you will. You know, that's really what this marketplace theory is. It's just simply that there's these fixed resources, and all the beasts in the jungle are sort of fighting for it, and that this is what determines how the economy evolves and develops. You know, but whereas the actual real development of mankind requires, as Lynn has laid out very clearly, this: you have to be constantly having revolutions in science, and you know that this comes across as, you know, this increase of energy flux density or capital intensity, and that capital intensity in a credit system is that you have to increase that the energy flux density, you know, the capital intensity, at a faster rate than you are taking the debt you're incurring to make that happen. And so these kind of projects like NWAPA, what Summer will be going through, and the people involved in that conference, which is going to be held in Chinatown, right, which obviously what Summer's done with his campaign has been around the four powers perspective, you know, the Russia, China, the United States, and soon following India, Japan, and others, you know, of course. But that's been his campaign, which really goes to the heart of that, you know, the slate is not a local regional campaign. These are national campaigns, and that we're looking at it from this standpoint as the leadership organizing the United States towards this three-power perspective. And so I think you look at something like NWAPA, there's no private firm that could possibly have the ability to extend this kind of extend this kind of money investments into this domain, and where it's going to be so long in terms of when you actually see returns from, you know, some sort of monetarist standpoint. But that, so this is the role of government, is that you have certain national interests that can be also seen as nation to nation interest as well, you know, sort of the Treaty of Westphalia idea that we look to the advantage of the other. And so we can extend this kind of credit into the future from the standpoint that we are building a future. And it's going to be done not through some whims of the market, but through an intention to create the capability of mankind to actually develop. So it's not this market idea. It is an intention to make it happen, and to do that by allowing mankind to do what it does, which is to be creative.
Right. Maybe you want to throw in there, you're on the, speaking of the condition of the planet and how deliberate advancement in the way you're discussing North American water and power lines presupposes we'd be defending the Earth. You mentioned the Strategic Defense of the Earth Initiative. But you have had more, right, earthquake, and there's more volcanic activity in Alaska and Hawaii, I believe. Mm-hmm. And people must also potentially be, maybe that's part of the reality, in addition to the out-and-out collapse John is describing, mm-hmm. that force potentially opens the way to people recommitting themselves to truth as human beings. Do you want to say something about the the Pacific and the Rim of Fire connection?
Well, I think, you know, it brings us to the other point here, which is there's a crisis of fascism, a crisis of the economic meltdown, but there's an even bigger crisis within this galactic crisis that has been outlined by, you know, the Basement Group and Lyndon LaRouche himself. So that's real, and we are going into this other the other side of the top side of the galaxy, as it's hypothesized. Mm-hmm. This is causing these kind of, you know, wild situations. You guys had an earthquake in D.C.
Yes.
There's an earthquake just in Texas. And of course, here in the Pacific Rim of Fire, we face that. I think what Putin did, which, you know, the SDE, it should be noted that this is the LaRouche's SDI. And I think it does come back to this Treaty of Westphalia perspective that we could have, which is nations cooperating on dealing with, is what we should be thinking about. We face these larger issues as mankind as a whole. We face this galactic threat. We're going to have to get off this planet at some point, and we should be working with other nations around these kind of cooperative developments on sharing scientific initiatives, which is what the whole point of Lin's SDI policy was. And so, you know, somebody like Putin coming forward and putting this forward, I think is the way we want to go. Because I'll just make one quick point here.
Yes.
Some of what we see going on in Africa or the Middle East with these, you know, these little wars that we've got going on, or frankly, bigger wars.
Yeah, U.S. sent troops to Africa, Central mm-hmm. Africa now.
That this is part of a bigger thing, which is not necessarily those nations that we're going after now. Like somebody like Iran, it has more to do with Russia. Or, you know, perhaps the stuff in Africa is to the Chinese, who have long-standing relations in Africa. So, point being, we don't need to have World War III. We can have cooperation amongst nations, and it should be done from this scientific perspective.
Right. Well, I think that's ending on the kind of optimism, which is based on us fighting like hell. That's the answer to our email from Virginia. And I think that one thing, you're going to have this conference. People can find the details, as you mentioned, for October 29th on LaRouchePAC.com. Look at events on the homepage. And the thing is, that's the same weekend where we have had a very recent tradition of Halloween Massacre. I think it was President Ford who unseated a few people that weekend. So let's keep that in mind. If we look forward to making that kind of thing happen, that can make all the difference in the world. And with that, I just want to stress to people, too, the EIR online that was just posted does cover many aspects of the infrastructure of the police state operation underway. The title of that EIR is "With Obama Still in Power, It Can Happen Here." We have a picture of Dick Cheney and Obama together, soulmates in this. And
we hypothesize that's Obama's new running mate for 2012.
Oh, okay. Yeah. There, it's a campaign poster. So yeah. We have to cut that one off at the pass. And with that, I think we've run out of time. But I want to thank you, Dave Christie, John Hofel. And this will be the end of October 22nd, 2011. Thank you all very much.
Thank you.
Sure.